chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you say it coming, no time to play out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Rest make the heaven the middle of it. Rest make the heaven the middle. We are. Rest make the heaven.
Secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. I want to start off by dedicating this program to Charlotte Iserby. She died recently up in Maine, but she wrote some very, very powerful books on education. And she was just a very wonderful person. And she was, if you want to say straight shooter, that would be the way to describe her. She was dedicated and about 90 years old, I believe, when she passed away. And may God bless her soul. I have up on the secrettruth.com site a photograph of her in her older age. But she also helped Anthony Sutton write some of the first books on the death cult of Yale, Skull and Bones. Her father was a member of the Skull and Bones and her grandfather. And she found out many years later that they had been members there. So on the secrettruth.com, I have up there the last three interviews that Jeff Rentz did with her. He had her on his program frequently. And then I have Charlotte Iserby's webpage describing something about her life. And then also I have two publications. One is Back to Basics Reform, or, was one of her earlier books in 1985. Then later in 1999, she wrote The Deliberate Dumbing Down of America. So if you could go in there and look at that, and you'll get so much out of it by going there and looking at that. Anyway, we're going to start off the program this evening with Greg Reese, and then followed by Christy Lee, and then we're going to have an extended clip by Alex all about Ottawa, COVID, and so forth. So here we go with Greg Reese, followed by Christy Lee.
Our government has been in close contact with the mayor of Ottawa and municipal and provincial officials. So far, the RCMP has mobilized nearly 300 officers to support the Ottawa Police Services and is ready to do more.
Rather than face the Canadian people, Justin Trudeau is sicking his police on them. Governments have been hiring globalist players and thugs for years. Meet Peter Slowly, known for being woke. 7 years ago, as deputy police chief, Peter Slowly said that being black made him a suitable candidate for Toronto's next police chief, and claimed a more important factor was his experience as a United Nations peacekeeper, an international police force known for raping and pillaging communities under the flag of peace. It was reported that there was much animosity when Slowly was not chosen to be Toronto's first black police chief. And a year later, he resigned. During his resignation speech, he bragged about tempting offers coming from the international private sector and went on immediately to join the company Deloitte, whose CEO sits on the board of directors at Pfizer and who was awarded over $40 million by the CDC to build a vaccine management system. A couple months before the COVID-19 scamdemic, Peter Slowly was made chief of the Ottawa Police. While the world celebrates the inspiring human spirit coming from the people of Canada, their own police steal their gasoline to freeze them out. Families and children. and the foundations of an incoming false flag are now being identified. Meet Peter Downing, a former cop for the RCMP who was given full pay and a clean record after a criminal conviction. Downing is the head of Wexit, an Alberta separatist movement seeking to overrule Canadian law with decrees set by the United Nations, and funded by a woman who sits on the board of the Atlantic Council. The Atlantic Council founded CrowdStrike, which ties them to Hillary Clinton. They are funded by George Soros and the Ukraine's Burisma. They are considered a threat to constitutional order by the Russian government, and they fund Peter Downing's Wexit. Wexit has made itself a part of the Ottawa protests, and their connections to George Soros and the RCMP should be cause for alarm. People need to be on the lookout for state-sponsored shenanigans.
We've been told that one of the triggers or indicators where we know that they are going to physically move against us and start arresting us is when our media goes down. When all of our telecommunications devices do go down, when we go fully black, the next phase of this will be the public order units will move in on us and start kettling. This is it. If there's a media blackout of everybody that you're connected to with this freedom convoy, that's your trigger that you know something is up, and I would encourage you to make arrangements and immediately start heading to Ottawa.
Trudeau's Liberals are now scurrying to pass their new anti-hate laws, straight out of communist China, where a Canadian can be fined $70,000 and thrown in jail for up to 4 years for the crime of posting anything on the internet that the government deems inappropriate. Reporting for InfoWars, this is Greg Reese.
This whole New World Order is so entangled, and the players elevate one another and have the monies, much less tax monies, and multi-billion dollar trust funds and foundation money to prosper their underlings, to elevate them and prosper their underlings and bring them along soon. And that's how they do this. Well, coming up next is Christy Lee, and she's really got some good things to say about Ottawa and other angles, and then we're going with an extended excerpt from Alex. Here we go with Christy Lee.
The trucker convoy narrative continues to crumble.
Individuals are trying to blockade our economy, our democracy, and our fellow citizens' daily lives. It has to stop.
Is he talking about the truckers? Because it sounds like everything he's been guilty of. And multiple news agencies shine a spotlight on an arson fire, insinuating violent truckers started it. Never mind, no truckers are actually in that area. And do these look like truckers protesting mask mandates? A puffy coat, a mask hanging from the ear? And multiple news agencies suddenly seem to care about the economy. Where is the outrage when the government and elites impede the economy with draconian restrictions? And as long as MSM is talking about violence, how much did you hear about this? An actual terror attack against the Freedom Convoy. The driver who mowed people down, the suspect identified as an Antifa member pedophile, not a freedom-defending trucker. You know what else is violent? Arresting an elderly man in this manner for unnecessary noise. Or in other words, honking his horn. Bringing you what's ignored, sensationalized, unbalanced, misleading, or just plain false, here's your media malfeasance for the second week of February. The COVID narrative also continues to crumble.
Saying, I don't think anyone really is saying that no one should ever wear masks, but rather that the responsibility should shift from a government mandate imposed from the state or the local district of a school. Rather, it should shift to an individual responsibility by the family.
You mean what some of us were saying 2 years ago?
And in this case, circumstances have changed. Case counts are declining. Also, the science has changed.
Science changes? I think you mean political science. changes much like this CNN contributor's own talking points.
I mean, I have an almost four-year-old and a one-year-old. I cannot wait until they're eligible to receive the vaccine. I agree that masks are a very powerful layer of protection, but it's one layer. And if we have so many other layers that are present, masking may be one that could go away. If you want to stay unvaccinated, that's your choice. But if you want to travel, you better go get that vaccine.
And fact check, Healthline says the vaccines are less effective against Omicron. Speaking of fact checks, the Tegna Verify team pretends it's fact checking the changing definition of vaccine.
Several viewers, including Mike, emailed Verify asking, did the CDC change its definition of vaccine? So Mike, let's verify.
Now she's going to go ahead and tell you, true, that the definition was changed. So why are we using the word alleged?
The word immunity isn't included in the latest definition. Instead, it focuses on the stimulation of the body's immune response.
So true, but they choose to play PR while they're at it, saying it's because the CDC wants to be more transparent. Say what? Since when have these federal health agencies wanted to be more transparent? Isn't the FDA still trying to hide the data used to approve the Pfizer vaccine? After not getting the 75 years they asked for to produce those documents, it's not backing down. More delays. Also catching up with the rest of us seems to be the Surgeon General, who now acknowledges the pandemic's impact on the mental health of our youth.
No shit, Sherlock.
The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention reported last year that emergency department visits for suicide attempts among teen girls were up more than 50% at the beginning of the pandemic compared to the same period in 2019. Yeah, lockdowns, masking, forced vaccinations, they're just as oppressive on kids as the rest of us. You know, the lockdown measures those fringe epidemiologists warned against in the Barrington Declaration and then were vindicated by a study that showed the stay-at-home orders made no difference. And it's looking like CNN just cannot get past 0 days since a sex scandal with a jury trial ordered for Don Lemon's sex assault case. Maybe it should now just be called CXXXN. Emails now reveal what we already know about the New York Times' straight-up bias. The Federalist obtained emails through a FOIA request that show correspondence between the New York Times and Biden's Interior Department. Phrases like, sorry, we're so annoying, and shelving stories, per the department's request. When shown to the chief of staff for the EPA under Trump, she says, we have reporters straight up tell us they wouldn't come cover events because they would never write a positive story about the Trump administration. And then there were other instances where they would just straight up spread false information. And finally, in case you missed it, Bloomberg almost brought us straight into nuclear war with its error. Here is the headline. Statement on publishing error. We prepare headlines for many scenarios, and the headline Russia invades Ukraine was inadvertently published around 4 p.m. Eastern on our website. We deeply regret the error. The headline has been removed, and we're investigating the cause. Well, that's all I can fit this week with your media malfeasance. I'm Christy Lee.
Coming up next is Alex, and he's very, very explosive in his ideas about what's happening. He says we're at a win here beginning in February 11th, but then they're going to ease off and then come back at us. But the soft kill, you know, idea and weapons are still in place. So here we go with Alex, and got some really insightful things to say this week.
Ladies and gentlemen, you can officially mark your calendars as February 11th, 2022, as the date that the COVID biomedical power grab, great reset tyranny officially collapsed. Now, they're still going to try to enforce and implement it, but if you had to pick a point to which the House of Cards began falling, really from day one they launched it 2+ years ago, because their own documents, their own arrogance, and a lot of good scientists and researchers, they weren't going to let them get away with it. So the House of Cards, right at the time they launched this lie, began to wobble and collapse, but it's been in slow motion free fall since then. But now it is a pile of cards on the table. Now it's up to us to prosecute the criminals that have carried out this psychological warfare operation and this biological warfare operation to bring in their world government transhumanist revolution. Now, they haven't given up. In fact, now the footage we've got today is so staggering, and there's so many clips. I woke up at 3 a.m. in the morning and went to my desk computer and just did research, and I sent these clips to the crew. We're going to be playing them, at least some of them. There's so many. And they're like, it's horrible. They're triggering a rebellion worldwide, and our system is coming down, and they're not listening to us, and this is a real revolution. We've got to silence them. And then they have the deputy DHS head come out and say that we need to physically attack the truckers, slash the tires, arrest the drivers. Harvard professor, CNN analyst, and former deputy head of Homeland Security calls for violence against Freedom Convoy. As if this woman knows how to even screw in a light bulb, much less you want to start killing people, lady. This is just the desperate, out-of-control behavioral psychologist system that thinks it owns us and has just terrorized the living hell out of everybody for 2 years, and they've now admitted, oh, hey, this is going to be permanent. And people are like, no, we don't want this. And her answer is, you need to go to prison, you're a terrorist. And I've got it on CNN, ABC, CBS, MSNBC. Even Fox has guests on saying people protesting are terrorists. They need to all be arrested. They're all evil. They're all racist. They're all, and none of it is true. And then I've got this clip coming up next segment. CNN is panicking that failing to crush the Ottawa convoy for freedom will spark a worldwide rebellion of angry people with industrial machinery. Well, that's the thing, sweetheart. For those of you that don't know about war, that think you just want to take our guns so we won't ever physically overthrow you, sweetheart, 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 with a hammer, I can get all the guns I ever want. With a car, I can get all the guns I ever want. What matters is knowing how to use one. And with a can of gasoline, I can burn down 5 large buildings with you inside of it. But you see, here's the thing, sweetheart. I'm not going to be dumping chlorine gas down the air conditioning chutes in trendy liberal areas. It's you people that have engaged in the terrorism. It's you people that have devalued the currency, butchered the borders, tried to sexualize our children, and done all of this bombardment with Big Pharma against us, and the fentanyl being shipped in, and the demoralization. You have been at war with us on record. And then you try to project onto people that we're violent when you're the ones fantasizing. The Biden administration, by the way, came out, I've got the article, and said Trudeau needs to use federal force to crack down on his insurrection. Children jumping on bouncy houses for day 11 now, or is it day 12? Crime rate almost zero now in Ottawa. Think about that. And they're calling it insurrectionist, terrorist, guilty of treason. That is the statements everywhere. But, of course, it's the ruling corrupt establishment that stole the world through Ponzi schemes that would make Bernie Madoff blush. And then they wanted to soften us up and feminize men and all the rest of it so that we would not resist their takeover. And now they're surprised that people understand they want violence, understand they think they can beat us if they trick us into violence. And so we're not being violent. We're politically, culturally, peacefully, with very light civil disobedience. Blocking bridges is light stuff. And that's what Martin Luther King would do. Mahatma Gandhi would do. And you're going to try to call that violent. And you're going to try to claim the supply chain's breaking down, not because of the 2 years of lockdowns in the third world where we get our supplies from mainly, but because of a couple weeks of truckers saying, hey, you attacked us with a blockade. We're going to hit you right back with a damn blockade to show you we got the power. Because you want to make us put in our bodies what you want, or we can't travel or have a job. And that's really the big news here, folks. I cannot express enough to you how incredible this moment is, but the enemy will strike back, and we'll talk about that in the next hour. But I want to talk about the positive things today here. All across the world, from Asia to the Middle East to Africa to Europe, Russia, North America, Central America, South America, everywhere, except the usual suspects, God bless them, are totally removing the restrictions because they know it built a crescendo, a crest of resistance in law enforcement, in the military, in the bureaucracy, in the systems, in the courts, everywhere to say no, because the average person now realizes this is destroying their own future. Going along with this, even if you work with the system and even if you're a bad person, you don't want to live in a dystopia, do you? People now know the New World Order stinks. So we have dramatic footage of little elementary students, little first graders celebrating when they're finally released as little prisoners from the mask. We'll explain Stockholm Syndrome and why it's so serious. Again, to all this, but Israel to scrap COVID green pass. Boom, just scrapping it. They're all scrapping everything. Now, they're going to try to bring it back later, but this beta test failed so far in phase one. Problem is, it's a soft kill weapon. Wait till that comes out. It's that eerie, powerful, transcendent sound now being heard in globalist control capitalists around the world as truckers and farmers and average citizens converge to say, we have solidarity with each other. We know about the Great Reset. We know about Build Back Better. We know you're bankrupting us to put us under your control. We know about Klaus Schwab and Bill Gates. And all over the world, not just the restrictions are being taken off, but more and more top scientists, more and more government insiders, more and more whistleblowers, literally hundreds a day, I can't even keep track of it, are coming out saying we were all lied to, it's a fraud. The government suppressed treatments. Big Pharma has bought off the media. This is a criminal takeover. And then all over the United States and Europe, children are being told they don't have to wear the horrible little mask anymore. Here's amazing footage.
You don't have to wear masks anymore.
And the teacher says, you don't have to wear masks anymore. And it goes on and on, the celebration. Poor little humans. Breathing in up to 30% less oxygen. Destroying their developmental systems, causing brain damage, lowering IQs.
Starting tomorrow, we don't have to wear masks anymore.
Starting tomorrow. But again, you know it's wrong, you know it's evil, you know it doesn't protect them. But why are you even celebrating as a teacher that you went along with this so long? This is in Las Vegas, Nevada. These children have just been abused by psychological warfare, behavioral psychologists, the greatest human experiment ever, total Nuremberg violation. And they're, yay, after years of this, finally, we're not going to have to do it anymore. It should be, how do we ever get here? This should never happen again. But they know how we act. They know we'll just brush ourselves off for being run over and hobble on down the road. But we can't. We must bring to justice legally and lawfully to the criminal justice system and every other legal means necessary the globalists that carry this out. And their fingerprints aren't just on it. They're on record running the entire attack.
Starting tomorrow, we don't have to wear masks anymore.
The biomedical tyranny trying to turn our little darlings into mentally ill hypochondriacs while injecting them and trying to fill them full of deadly poisons that are made out of the HIV virus that attack every organ in the body and turn off your white blood cells so you get cancer and every other disease and die. Oh, and that's the bad news. I have a stack of mainstream news here admitting record heart attacks, blood clots, myocarditis, and of course cancer, and of course deaths, and it doesn't matter. Suddenly the Smithsonian and science and physicians world are saying it's incredible news. What's in the Pfizer and Moderna shot, the graphene oxide, creates a perfect biomedical sensor, and now they're going to be able to read everybody, they say, with machines. It's a byproduct of what you took. You're tracked now. Oh, it's in the news. Yeah, they just announced, oh, by the way, we've now put circuitry into you. Just a couple molecules thick, couple atoms thick, actually. And it's mainstream news. Graphene biosensor will drive new innovations in brain-controlled robots. Oh, and it's the exact type of graphene oxide that's been injected into you, and it's just a funny byproduct now that people that have had the shot can now have certain new types of medical diagnostics. Wow, and those that don't will just inject you with it, and now you can. Oh, and they're coming out. I forgot to cover the shish. It was in the stack. Reprint it for me, guys, gals. Oh, they just found out that they've got a new mRNA shot coming out to stop myocarditis and heart damage. Oh, you take another shot because of the new epidemic of heart problems, including in young people. Well, now they've got a shot for that. Oh, and it's Pfizer. Just so happens to have it ready. Man, that's just really interesting, isn't it? We're not supposed to put two and two together here. Like Bill Gates running a giant global project to spray aluminum dioxide, barium salts, and other deadly isotopes in the air, which now has poisoned most of the soils. And they have now GMO plants that he owns and Monsanto owns that are coming to market that will grow in aluminum dioxide and barium salt. Isn't that just sweet? Thank goodness for Bill Gates. He's such a nice, 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 nice man. Yeah, there's the Columbus Dispatch. Oh, the technology using mRNA could offer vaccines for people with heart problems. That's just so sweet. All right. Let me do this. Let me break down why this is such a big victory. They always intended to back off at a certain point to drive and drive and drive and drive and drive and drive. But they thought they would get basically the whole world to adopt the vaccine passport system. Davos Group ran ads last year saying that, you know, China developed it and we're adopting it worldwide and you will buy and sell with it. And when you purchase airline tickets, it'll deduct it off of your vaccine passport. And most of you notice on your Droid or iPhone or other smart device that you go in your apps now and it's just on there that you've got your digital pass software. But they intended to get it fully in place in their own words, and they thought that a lot more people would just submit, and they thought when they censored folks that everybody else would just self-censor because they wouldn't want to be criticized or knocked off social media. But instead, people just stopped caring and went out and built their own systems and went out and migrated to new systems. And so we're in a real fight with evil. I mean, they thought they would have had us. They hit the panic button, as you know, 2 years ago, the Financial Times said, 2-plus years ago, about 26 months ago, they said our new world order is over. All over the world, populists are taking over. They're aware of us. They know how we're operating because they just write the stuff on the paper like we're animals and can't read it. And barring a giant war or maybe a deadly virus or some huge event to bring the earth together, our new world order is dead. Our project's dead. And I told you back in 2019, I said, folks, they're going to launch a virus. They're going to launch a war. They're going to launch cyber attacks. They're going to launch financial collapses. I don't know which one they're going to do or if they'll do some or all, but I've read all their white papers, at least all the ones I get my hands on, and they've signaled they're doing this, and they did it. And now we are 2-plus years into their attack, and they are ceasing their attack and retreating right now because they know they overdid it. This is a big, big moment. Now, the problem is the soft kill. But I'm going to explain, now that's an even bigger problem for them now. Wait till I break this down. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us on this February 11th, 2022 broadcast. All over the world, the biomedical worldwide tyranny of the COVID power grab is collapsing. The corporate global governance assault is falling apart. But in the former penal colony of Australia and the globalist controlled system of Canada, and of course the birthplace of Hitler, the beautiful nation of Austria, all with their authoritarian past are launching full-scale tyranny. Please put the Bloomberg headline on screen. The province of Ontario has declared martial law. Ontario declares state of emergency over blocked U.S. bridge, says $100,000 fine and prison sentences if you protest. And, of course, they're going to try to expand that into other areas. That is the terrorism of the globalists. That's like Tiananmen Square. We're going to attack you. We're going to arrest you if you try to blockade things. But when they blockade everybody, you know the worst part about the 15 days to flatten the curve is the first 2 years. You know what happens. And that's what Biden is in the news telling Trudeau yesterday to do, to, quote, use federal force to crush your insurrection because you don't want to be made to take experimental shots. You don't want to be made to make your kids wear masks. You don't want to be made to stay in your house when they say. You don't want to be tracked by a phone app, by Big Brother. You're a bad person. And that dovetails with the former deputy head of Homeland Security coming out on CNN and saying, slash the tires, also on Twitter. But you got to love this quote because it's oxymoronic. Slash the tires, arrest the drivers. Harvard professor and CNN analyst calls for violence against Freedom Convoy. But if you slash the tires, then you can't move the trucks. But she doesn't seem to understand that. Harvard, she's just a Harvard professor, CNN analyst, former Obama administration Undersecretary of Homeland Security, Juliette Kayyem, has called for violence and vandalism against Freedom Convoy protesters who have amassed on the bridge that connects Detroit, Michigan to Windsor, Ontario. The Ambassador Bridge links 28% of annual trade movement between the U.S. and Canada, she tweeted. Slash the tires, empty gas tanks, arrest the drivers, and move the trucks. And in that order, the convoy protest applauded by right-wing media as a freedom protest is an economic and security issue now. The Ambassador Bridge link constitutes 28% of annual trade movement between the U.S. and Canada. Slash the tires, empty the gas tanks, arrest the drivers, and move the trucks. No, it would be arrest the drivers, move the trucks. But that doesn't sound violent enough to you because you don't know anything about violence. You just know how to run your ugly pie hole, don't you, sweetheart?
So we must continue our struggle. There was a clip that American Journal had on their program of Carrie Lake, and we're just going to play a small clip of her being interviewed and what she says about the Second Amendment. She's currently running for governor of Arizona, and boy, we've got to support her. So here's just a brief couple of minute clip of Carrie Lake, what she thinks about the Second Amendment. Here we go.
So this is Carrie Lake following up with her bombshell interview here in America with an incredible bombshell interview in Australia. It's just, I love this. This is, let this wash over you. Let this white pill you. Let this bring me down, okay, from this, the heights at which I find myself. Here she is, Carrie Lake, talking about the corporate media cabal turning out hit pieces on her. But sadly, she says she hits back harder. Let's watch.
Do you think they should be pardoned?
I have no say in that. I'm running for governor. This isn't something a governor does. You're trying to twist this interview and trying to make me look bad.
He's the Republican leader.
What I don't like is that people are being held in prison without being charged. That's un-American. Maybe they get away with that stuff in Australia, perhaps in Australia, because you've given your rights away, you melted down all of your guns, and you guys have no freedom, that you find that okay. But here in America, we do things differently. We have something called the U.S. Constitution, and we have rights. And we don't take kindly, on Americans being locked up for months on end without being charged. So charge them or get off the pot.
So we'd be better off having more guns here. I mean, what?
Yeah, you would. You absolutely would, sir. You absolutely would. I feel so sorry for the people in Australia. Have no power. The only thing keeping us from being Australia right now or Canada is our Second Amendment. And we will never, ever let that go. Mark my words. What we saw happening in Australia, where you have internment camps and people are being forced, if they've encountered anybody with COVID, to be locked into a quarantine camp, is the most horrifying thing I think I've ever seen a government do. It's frightening. And if you can't see that, I feel sorry for you.
Yeah, these interviewers are trying to twist everything, like Carrie Lake said. But Victor David Hansen had this to say about globalism. It's a short clip here. But he does reference some of our ancient Greek philosophers and what they thought about globalism. So here we go with Victor David Hansen, what he said about globalism is dead or is over. Here we go next.
What is the United Nations going to do? And the answer is they can't do anything. In the ancient world, Socrates of all people said that he was not a citizen of Athens alone. He was a citizen of the world. Our term cosmopolitan comes from that concept, that he had affinities with all the city-states and indeed with all the people in the world. In a very cynical fashion, when Alexander the Great in the latter 4th century BC, at the demise of the city-state, went into Asia Minor and then on to conquer the Persian Empire, he needed a propaganda talking point, and one of it was he was going to usher in what he called the Brotherhood of Man, a new ecumenical idea that whether you were Persian or Greek, you were a human. It sounds wonderful, but the idea was that enlightened rulers from the Hellenic world would spread their superior civilization all over the world. And it didn't last very well. In Roman times, Romans being far more practical, they didn't talk about globalization as much as reified it. They made it concrete. But immediately, there were voices within Rome that said the further a sovereign nation expands and globalizes, the more difficult it is to maintain the solidarity of the people, the purity of the original founding concepts. The more we think we're making people into Romans, the more they think they are making us into other peoples other than Romans. One of the problems that globalists or cosmopolitans learned very early in the 20th century during the progressive movement was when you surrender sovereignty to these international bodies, then who is the police? Who polices the police? So the League of Nations, which was envisioned under Woodrow Wilson's Versailles agenda, for a very brief time seemed to be successful in adjudicating international disputes of trade or jurisdiction or borders until Adolf Hitler or the Japanese militarists or Joseph Stalin said, I don't need to listen to you. And so World War II doomed the first incarnation of a united group of nations, the League of Nations. After World War II, the same suspicious idea resurfaced with the United Nations. But this time we were going to have a Security Council, and they were going to be the world's top powers, the strongest, the most successful. And then they could be the enforcer. But the problem, of course, was that very early on, the Soviet Union was not the solution to the problem, but it was the problem itself. Because there's always going to be some country who's powerful by breaking the rules and going beyond its own prerogative. In other words, China. So the problem is not today Mussolini of Italy or Hitler of Germany or the Japanese militarists of the 1930s, but it's an aggressive, communist, autocratic, and anti-democratic China that has currently 1.5 million people in camps. And yet they're on the United Nations, and they're a citizen of the world. And if the United Nations would decide that the Chinese, contrary to the UN Charter, are putting people in concentration camps, or they're harvesting organs from people deemed not necessary, or they're forcing people to have abortions that don't fit their idea of family planning, or they're bullying their neighbors, or they illegally created a base in the Spratly Islands, what is the United Nations going to do? And the answer is they can't do anything. In 2020, we saw an international pandemic, and our United Nations Charter Medical Organization, the World Health Organization, warned us from the very beginning, do not issue a travel ban against China. And then we learned that the World Health Organization was essentially parodying or mimicking what China wanted. And why did they do that? Because of Chinese money and Chinese pressure. This is not an aberration. It's inherent in the idea of global governance that there is always going to be strong powers who have agendas that are not global in scope, but they're national and sovereign. But if all the other countries in the world surrender their sovereignty and one powerful nation doesn't, then they have to come up with a mechanism of collective defense. And so far in the history of man, that's never worked.
Yeah, who wants to give up their sovereignty and be ruled by someone else anyway? But anyway, Hannity had an interview with John Kennedy, senator from Louisiana, about the distribution of these crack pipes. So here we go with that.
$30 million for lip balm. Here with reaction, Louisiana Senator John Kennedy. You know, the original Free Beacon article, Senator, you know, I don't know, maybe I've been doing this job for way too long. 33 years in radio, 26 years here at Fox, but call me suspicious. I suspect that the crack pipe was included for meth and crack users, but the pushback maybe made them think twice. Your thoughts?
Once again, intelligence is chasing the Biden administration, but the Biden administration is managing to beat it. This entire controversy, in my judgment, Sean, is why millions of Americans tonight are thinking, you know, Republicans aren't perfect, and God knows we're not, but the other side is crazy. Now think about this. The President Biden has decided to take $30 million of taxpayer money from his emergency COVID bill that he passed with Democratic support last March, and he wants to use it to facilitate the smoking of crack cocaine and meth. In the name of racial justice, racial equity. He says, his people say they can make the smoking of crack cocaine and meth safer. First, why are they using COVID money? Number two, why are they using any money at all? There's no safe way to smoke crack or meth. Sooner or later, it kills you. And that's just a fact. Why do we want to facilitate it? Why, Americans are asking themselves, wouldn't we take this money and use it to help people get off the illicit drugs? Why wouldn't we take this money, the American people are asking themselves, and use it to stop the drugs from coming in our country in the first place by securing the border? And what does any of this have to do with racial justice? Crack cocaine and meth, whether you smoke it or inject it, will kill you. It doesn't matter what color you are or what your gender is. Now look, stupidity is a lot like pornography. It's very hard to define, but you know it when you see it. This is stupidity.
You know, Senator, how would he spend $30 million? I don't know. I'm just doing simple math here. And all you're buying is lip balm and, let's see, alcohol wipes or whatever, clean wipes, whatever they're going to buy. $30 million would probably be a lifetime or decade supply for the entire country. So I don't believe them. Do you think, as I do, that they're lying? Because I think the original plan is what was reported in the Washington Free Beacon.
Well, you know, maybe George Washington couldn't tell a lie, but just about every politician since then has mastered the art. I suspect they're not being candid. You're right. Originally, the administration said they would include crack pipes. Now Jen Psaki said today, nope, we're going to leave out the crack pipes. But they're still sending out kits, illicit drug smoking kits that are designed to facilitate the smoking of crack cocaine and meth. And they say if you use our kits, it's safer. And it promotes racial equity. There's no safe way to use crack cocaine and meth. Sooner or later, it kills you. Why aren't we spending this money to get people off the illicit drugs? Why aren't we spending this money to stop the drugs from coming into our country? And what does any of this have to do with COVID? And what does any of this have to do with racial equity or racial justice? I mean, this is, there aren't words in English, Sean. I swear to God, the Biden administration just keeps kicking its own rear end, and I don't understand it.
You know what? And I don't want to stop them from doing it because we really need new leadership quickly. Senator, we always love having you. Thank you for being with us.
Closing out this program this evening is about a 9-minute clip by Charlotte Israby. And it's on YouTube, and it's entitled Deliberate Construction of Idiocracy. So God bless you, Charlotte Israby, for all that you did for this country. And here we're closing out this program in honor of you and one of the 10-minute clips that you did over the years. Here we go with Charlotte Israby, the finest person around.
My name is Charlotte Thompson Israby, and I served as senior policy advisor in the United States Department of Education under the Reagan administration, during which I had access to all of the most important documents for the restructuring of not only American education, but global education. And I'm also the author of The Deliberate Dumbing Down of America, which gets into all of this, gives the background of what I saw not only in the Department of Education, but as a local school board member. I was trained to identify the resistors to the sex ed, drug ed, alcohol ed, suicide ed, death ed, those good, smart Americans who realize that anything that has education hanging off the end of it is probably not what they're looking for. I was trained to identify those good people and to go up against them and actually to go and try to get them to join us through the group process system, make them feel important, get them on a committee. And when that just blew my mind. I have to say, people often ask me, what is it that got you involved in education? Well, finding out what I saw at the local level certainly upset me. When I went and I saw that Americans were being trained to identify resistors, you know, then I got pretty upset. And luckily, there was a big book that came with the in-service training called Innovations in Education, A Change Agent's Guide. And I was able to take that back home with me. Unbelievable examples of how to con the Christians and different people who are upset with what you're trying to do. How to bring them over to your side. Case studies, true case studies of educators who had put programs in that normally, you know, in a normal American town, nobody would want them. How did they manage to get them in? How did they con the people? And the other thing was, not only was I trained to identify the resistors, I was trained to go to the important people, high profile, highly thought of people in the community with the Rotary and Chamber of Commerce, Garden Club, you name it, the different groups in our towns. Go to them and convince them of the importance of these new programs like sex ed, drug ed, I just mentioned all of them, and get them on your side, because when you can get the leadership in a community to go along with it, then the newspaper comes in and says, you know, a committee's been set up with the head of the Rotary and this and that, and they're all getting behind this task force to discuss whether we're going to have a new sex education program. And then when Mary Jones, you know, who ordinarily would think, why would we want to have a sex education program when we don't have any problems with kids having sex or anything, so she might be concerned. She might be one of the resistors. She reads that her best friend, who's the head of the garden club, is on this committee, and she thinks, oh, well, hey, Mary Appleton is on the committee. She's heading it up. It must be okay. So I was taught really how to con the community. They always call everybody by the first name. You have to get very, you know, affectionate with people, and you say, William, you know, I'm so glad you've come to this meeting, and I understand your concerns about this program, because I've had other people, usually it's the really bright people in the community who have these concerns, and would you like to join our group? The original program was funded by what would subsequently become my office. It was funded by the Office of Research in the U.S. Office of Education, because it was funded early on, about the late 60s, still funded, by the way. And the money went to the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor to a professor by the name of Ronald Havelock. And he was the one that put together the whole training, the whole seminar, the book. And in the back of the book they admitted it. Right in the back of the book, they had about 100 major change agents listed from all over the country. Some of them I recognize, some I still don't, but some I do. And so this was a very important project. And it was being, it was being carried out all over the country, not just where I was. This was in Searsport, Maine, this lovely little town on the coast of Maine, in the school there where the guy came in, the facilitator, not Professor Havelock, but a facilitator, to train us. And these were good people that were there. You know, they were some of the teachers from my school, where I was on the local school board, principals, etc. Normal-looking Americans. You really ask yourself, they must themselves have reacted very much the way I did. That's why I've always had a lot of understanding for teachers that have to go through this stuff. I didn't have to continue going through it. They've had to, through the years, constant training, retraining, sensitivity training, break their values. Right, no wrong. You've got to have all religions represented. So, you know, tolerant of everything, and because that's the New World Order. Disorder. Professor Benjamin Bloom is probably the most important behavioral psychologist ever to live. I mean, maybe not quite as much as Pavlov and Skinner, but he really implemented the system in education in the United States. And he was author of The Taxonomy of Educational Objectives. And I know that doesn't mean much to us. It means a lot to teachers. They know. All teachers have to go through that. Bloom's taxonomy. And just to give you an idea of how blatant they are, Benjamin Bloom said the purpose of education, and I often say this to parents, really, listen to this. You think the purpose of education is reading, writing, and arithmetic? The purpose of education is to change the thoughts, actions, and feelings of students. And then he goes on and he says, he defines good teaching, and this is even worse from the parental standpoint, as challenging the students' fixed beliefs. And then in some of his works that I have, that are in my book, a lot of this stuff is in there.
When he says challenge, does he mean challenge or does he mean change? Change their fixed?
Yeah, through challenging. It's through challenging. You go up against them and you change them. And you asked a good question, because then he goes on in one part of the taxonomy that is in my book, he says that he can take a student from here to there, from a belief in God or his country or whatever, to being an atheist and not believing in his country in 1 hour.
Did he do that?
Oh, yeah, he does it. And I've seen it with students. I've seen it with young people. And they don't even know. And teachers don't even know. That's why if you talk to teachers about it often, they'll really have an awfully hard time dealing with it. And if you go up to a superintendent, an educational administrator, superintendent or whatever, and you ask him or her, have you ever been through sensitivity training? They'll usually crack up because they went through it. They're the worst, those programs. I've been through them. I mean, how can anything be worse than some of the ones that the regular classroom has? But they're the worst. To bring about change, they put them through role-playing, psychodrama, all these psychological techniques where they play the part of starving children and the other one plays the part of a very wealthy industrialist child. And, you know, they bring about the attitude and value change through the emotions. You know how young people are. You know, they're naturally very altruistic and they want to help and they don't like to see poverty around the world. And so what they'll do is, just like I think I mentioned to you earlier, all right, I don't know whether I did, going into the teacher, putting in the new social studies program in our community and walking through, taking the little tots through town and identifying big, rich people's houses and small, poor people's houses. That's a perfect example of what I'm talking about. Getting them young and making them feel sorry for the people who live in the trailer across from the captain's house, because they only eat hot dogs, not steak. And then they'll do the same thing with Ethiopia or wherever, some third world country, showing them the children dying. And then they'll show pictures of our affluence. And what do you eat for breakfast? Oh, you have eggs and bacon and cereal and orange juice and grapefruit and everything. Yum, yum, yum. Do you really think it's fair? Common unity. That's what we call it, common unity. There's no role for the individual in the community. And for everything that goes on in the Soviet Union or communism is based on the community, the commune.
She was a fighter against communism. And what they did in this country is they converted many of our schools and our teachers and our professors into Marxist communists. And she's a real fighter. And that was Charlotte Easterby with about a 10-minute excerpt from one of her interviews years and years ago when she was much younger. But we're up here fighting every Saturday evening, and we've got this podcast out there now, and we're pulling up the most important clips that we have found. We honor those truckers up in Ottawa and other areas, out in Alberta and other areas, and it's catching on in this country. We encourage each and every one of them not to give up, to continue. Perhaps this convoy across America to Washington, D.C. will begin soon. It may have already. And it could be the beginning of a major protest movement in this country. And in Paris today, they were protesting on vaccines and things like this, and very restrictive measures. So the resistance, you could say, is picking up all over the world. And it will have an effect, and there will be some good things that will come out of this. But I want to thank everyone out there in the listening audience to that continue to listen. I thank the, and I want to bless each and every one of you. And there's some fine people in this country that are willing to stand up and fight this tyranny that has developed in this authoritarian health, you know, mechanism, health tyranny. And I'm up here to fight and try to protect our loved ones, and especially our young people. Don't get any shots for these young people, period, because it's causing heart damage and a lot of other things, very bad things. But thank you for listening, and God bless each and every one of you out there.